So engagement and CCAs, so common conversion activities. The interesting thing is this is really the uncommon way to engage and convert customers. Now, before I get too deep into this, I have to remind everyone, and myself included, that there are some prerequisites for optimization. And I have been reminded of this a couple of times recently on the FTD talk discussion list, but I've also have been dealing a lot with companies that have software products and are trying to go to the cloud. So I've been dealing a lot with startups, basically. You know, I consider if you're making a big a business architecture change, that you know you're a startup. You're bringing something new to market. So I've actually been dealing a lot with some of this very early stage stuff. But I've also been you know, there's some members in this program that need to be reminded of this stuff, I think, as well. We all do. We all need to remember this. So, you know, you probably had a chance to look at this. It's five things that are really required before optimization really makes a lot of sense. In other words, you don't want to spend a lot of time optimizing something if these aren't already in place. On the flip side, going through the steps that we talk about, going through the process of optimization will actually force you to take a look at some of these things. So I'm not saying, you know, certainly being in the Free Trial Dominator program is not a waste of time, but you know, it may not be as effective if you don't have these things in place. But going through the stuff that we talk about should help you get these things in place. So I'll go through these really quick. Number one, you have to have a product that solves a real problem. That should be a no-brainer for us, right? Well, occasionally we run into situations where the problem is something that doesn't really exist outside of maybe our office or our computer or our world. And we built a great product, but it doesn't actually solve a real problem. More often than not, it's not the product that's the problem. It's that the problem that you're trying to solve isn't one that your market knows about. They don't know that they have a problem. It's really hard and expensive and time-consuming to try to get people to know that they have a problem. And then, once they know they have the problem, then to convince them that you have the solution to that problem. So you need a product that solves a real problem, and you need to have a market that, you know, ideally already knows that they have a problem. But then, number three, you have to have a scalable, sustainable, and repeatable way to reach that market. So distribution and talking about personas and understanding who the different buyers are and all of those different things. If we have a product that solves a real problem and the market knows they have a problem, but it requires us to go out in person to meet with each and every potential customer, but the price point at which the product is going to be offered, or is one, you know, the price point that your customers can actually pay, is really low, then there may not be an economically viable opportunity there. So we have to know all of these things up until number three that are in place. I will say this, that there are situations where you might have, number one, the product solves a real problem. You might have a scalable and sustainable way to reach them. But again, if you don't have number two, that's going to be your biggest hurdle. And most of the time, that's where I see the biggest problem. It's not that, you know, especially when you have very talented programmers and, you know, a lot of folks that are startup entrepreneurs and in the web space are programmers by trade or at heart or however you want to say it, build a really great product. But, you know, and then they can go out and find some scalable ways to reach an audience, but the problem is that the audience doesn't know they have a problem. That's going to be difficult. Now, the product that conforms, so number four is product that conforms to user experience and user interface best practices. Usability. Somebody said to me, "Hey, Lincoln, you don't cover usability in this program." And I said, "Well, there's a lot of stuff I don't cover in this program. It's very, very focused on free trials. Sorry, you know, I can't do everything." But he said, you should cover that. So I just wrote a post, put it up in the Free Trial Dominator membership site called Usability Matters for Conversion or something like that. I'll send you guys the link. It just, you know, here's a list of things, a list of resources for best practices, and there's a book in there that's really great. I thought, and I have to admit, I took it for granted that we were creating products that were usable, right? That had good usability. But I don't want to take things for granted anymore. If your product is not usable, that's a problem. If your product looks like an enterprise product, and you're trying to come to market in a way that you know, that's new and agile, and you know, all these new buzzwords, right? And your product looks like this old-timey software, that could be a problem, you know, especially if everything else, all the adjacent products in your market, are modern-looking and cool. On the flip side, you can go too modern and too cool for your market, and you have to be careful. I would say, and I'd give this warning in that post that I just put up, that you have to be careful of falling into the trap of best practices for software design when what we're selling is something different than that. I'm going to get into that a lot today. But so learn usability from a software standpoint, sure, but don't forget that this doesn't have to be a software interface. It can be something that looks like a web page, you know, something that's a little bit more friendly. So I want to make sure that we're cool on that. And then number five, so all of those things, if you have those in place, that's great. But number five, you have to have a way for your customers to buy the way they want to or can buy. One of the biggest problems I see is especially with companies that are coming from the enterprise sort of installed software world and coming to SaaS, is that, well, we're gonna take credit cards. We're gonna charge $19.95 a month, or, you know, whatever it is, and take a credit card. And the reality is, just because you changed your model, or just because you're coming to market with a certain model, doesn't mean that your market is ready for that. They might still require invoices and pay by check or pay by ACH or whatever it is. So you have to present your solution in a way that your audience can actually consume. So that also you need to think about it from a price standpoint. We always hear this OpEx versus CapEx, you know, in terms of SaaS, you know, one of the big value propositions for SaaS or cloud or whatever. And that's fine. And we understand that generally speaking, capital expenditures for large enterprise software installations and stuff like that, you know, are a thing of the past, and we need to come in and charge on a monthly basis, a recurring basis, so that we're in the operating expense. But, you know, there are situations where that might not be what needs to happen. You know, Salesforce.com just announced a couple of weeks ago that I don't remember what it was, I don't have it in front of me, it was like a $14 million deal or something like that, right? That's not on a credit card. that's not a per month price. You know, I think it was like a 3 or 4 year deal, maybe a little bit longer. It was a very big installation, quote unquote installation, very big deal, and very much an enterprise sales, an enterprise sale, right? So we have to take those things into consideration, that just because we have the SaaS business architecture doesn't mean we're going to be able to change necessarily the way our customers buy. Now, if you have a large enough brand, if you've been in the market long enough, if you have a large enough market penetration, at some point you may be able to influence the way your customers buy, but that might not be the way it is right out of the gate. So if we have all of those things in place, then we can start to optimize. Now, why I said, you know, if you don't have some of those things in place, commercialization is probably one of the places where a lot of you might be struggling. Then optimizing, going through some of these things that we talk about today and some of the things that we talk about in the entire Free Trial Dominator program, are going to help you go sort of reverse engineer or back into a commercial model that makes the most sense. So I don't think anything that we're talking about today or anything that we talk about in the program is not going to help you, but those are five things that you really need to have in place. Now, this slide, these are some things that I've come up with that I really didn't know where to put in this presentation, but I really wanted you to know them. I wanted to put these out here. I wanted you guys to think about this stuff. So I just created a slide called Deep Thoughts. These are some philosophical things. Perception of value. I've been talking to enterprise software companies that, you know, have a large, generally large, but sometimes, you know, they have relatively small deals, but they sell their product for an upfront payment. And they are basically selling their product, or really anything that you buy that you don't have any experience with, you're buying it on this sort of perception of value, Okay, so if you have a buy now button on your site for your product, and somebody comes there and they click that button and they sign up and they pay you right now and they bypass the trial, they are buying on a perception of value. They think your product is going to be able to do something for them, so they buy. The problem is, and we know this, this is why we offer free trials, is that the number of people that are going to do that are much smaller than the number of people that could ultimately become customers. So if we only have that option, we might be missing out on the more significant part of the market. Sort of in opposition to perception of value-based sales is this sort of realization of value. The idea here is that in a free trial, what we should be shooting for is that people come in and they realize the value. They're being able to extract some sort of value from the product, and it's at that point, once they reach that point where they have that realization of value, that they will convert. Now, theoretically, that should be a much higher number because than these the people that buy now, because the number of people that would be would sort of bounce or leave if all you had was a buy now button is relatively high. So if we have a free trial, we should get a lot more people into that. If we can get them to that point where they realize value, they'll convert. The biggest problem I see is that in a free trial, for most SaaS vendors, and I will say most, it's still most, the free trial only leads to a perception of value, just continues that perception of value. I come in to a dashboard that is either devoid of any guidance, or it's just really complicated, or it might just be a blank screen and I don't know where to go from there. So I kick the tires. I poke around. Remember, that's what a lot of vendors say. Well, I want the free trial. It's there to get people to poke around, to kick the tires. Well, the problem is all that's doing is just allowing me to perceive the value. I'm going to load it with seed. I'm going to seed it with dummy data. I'm going to put in, examples and things like that. Yeah, that's great. I'm still perceiving value. It's really just an extended demo, right? It's like an interactive demo. So again, if we theoretically say that the number of people that come in and still perceive value, who end up buying, theoretically that should be fewer people than those who actually come in and realize value. So those are the differences there. And then, again, sort of outside the scope of this program, but very much something we all have to consider, and a lot of the stuff we talk about in this program is absolutely applicable to post-trial, once they're actually in as customers, is the idea of retention or churn, depending upon how you want to look at it, if the glass is half full or empty. Think of it this way, in a recurring revenue model, but I would say in any sort of model, even if I bought, I paid $1 million up front for this ERP system, and every year I have to make a decision to either, to continue with support, or every 3 years I have to, decide if I'm going to replace it with another product. If I'm not realizing value from that offering, I'm probably going to go somewhere else, or I'm going to decide to bring support in-house and cancel your support contract. So continual realization of value is where you get retention from. So in a cloud model, if we're looking at it, in this sort of recurring revenue model where people are basically every month deciding to continue to use your product, if they are not realizing value every month, then they are going to bail. So those are three very strong concepts that I really want you to think about and understand and keep in mind. So these other two are sort of just independent of those. I want you to always think about the fact that you're selling productized expertise rather than software. And this goes back to this, what I talked about on the previous slide about designing the user experience and not thinking about it just as designing software. Productized expertise, however we want to think about it, really does separate you from a software vendor. And it's what allows you to, quite honestly, to charge more for your product because you understand what you're bringing to market is expertise, it's data, it's something more than just bits and bytes, right? And then finally, high tech allows for high touch in a scalable way. when I'm talking to people, and it's very simple, very easy to think about an e-commerce model, a self-service model, as the quote-unquote low-touch model. And I'm guilty of saying that myself. And what I mean, and what most people really mean, I believe, is low human touch, low touch, you know, from a human capital expense standpoint, right? I don't have to have a human being sitting there interacting with every customer all of the time. But high tech allows us to actually have that high touch. And so I want us to be thinking about it from that standpoint. You know, I said it before to you guys, I say it all the time to my clients and other people that I'm talking to, is, you know, what we have is an opportunity to not get rid of your sales team. There's going to be some industries, by the way, that at least for the time being, for the foreseeable future, aren't going to move away from wanting that sort of one-on-one contact with a real person. So there are times, you know, where you're not going to be able to get away from that. And there are other situations where, you know, if I'm talking to the head of sales, I don't want to say to them, the goal is to ultimately get rid of your entire organization. What I want to say to them is, what if you had one salesperson who right now works with 10 clients or 10, you know, 10 prospects a month? What if that salesperson could work with 20, right? So you're going to use your salespeople in a more scalable way. So if we think about high tech, and I'd only say high tech in this situation because it fits with high touch, and I think I also heard this from somewhere. I'm not sure that I invented this phrase, but if we think about the technology that we have available, and we think about the fact that we want to have lots of different touch points, and that can be not just email, it can be in-app, it can be voicemail blasts. You know, I mean, there's lots of different ways that we can do this to send out, to contact and make contact with and touch our prospects. And then, of course, front loading before they ever sign up for the trial, you know, front loading the indoctrination process, doing all of these different things on the web and via technology that allow us to reach some level of scalability. So I just want you to have these deep thoughts. I spent a little bit more time on that than I wanted, but I think it's super ultra important that you guys really grasp these concepts, especially the perception of value versus realization of value. Which those concepts come right into this question. And I've asked, a lot of you have seen the questionnaire that when you first sign up, that or I ask you this question. I've received it from quite a few of you. Some of you haven't filled it out, or at least haven't shared it with me. But I ask most people when they sign up, or I ask everybody when they sign up to, you know, to fill out this free trial profile and then to share it with me, linking at lincolnmurphy.com on Google Docs, because I want to see where you're at. But whether you share it with me or not, it's not the point. I want you to look at it. One of the questions I ask is, what does a successful trial look like to you? Everybody says, well, a successful trial to us is that they convert to a paying customer. Well, yeah, makes total sense. But, you know, where some people have seen is that the people that are actually signing up for the trial aren't the economic buyer. Turns out, the people that are signing up for the trial, the people that are actually out Googling, looking for an answer to their problem, a solution to their problem, are people that don't have a budget, that can't actually buy. So what needs to happen is we need to empower those people during the trial to be able to basically sell the product to their higher ups. So there was a hospital management hospital management system for small medium sized hospitals. Turns out that person generally is the person that would go out and find the solution. Well, the part of the company that would actually make the buying decision was the CFO. And so what we said was, okay, instead of trying to sell that person that's not going to buy, and also instead of trying to limit access to the trial, let's give them the tools they need to make the sale for us. They're going, you know, if we can empower them, they can go to the CFO and actually make the sale. So in that case, yes, ultimately a successful free trial for us is a conversion to a paying customer. But we need to take a step back and look at the different parts of this sales process and say, you know what, for a free trial in some scenarios, the success might not be that they convert. It, you know, looking at it in a very granular way, the success might be that they printed out the ROI justification sheet and took it to their CFO. By the way, if somebody prints out an ROI justification sheet or goes through some process to get some propaganda for a pitch, that should trigger something to your salespeople that maybe they should reach out, make sure that that person has all their questions answered before they go talk to the CFO, right? So this is how we need to be thinking about it. It's not just get their credit card and get a conversion. It's we need to know who's using the product. And I'm sorry, a lot of times it's going to take, especially at first, actually talking to customers. Now, what does a successful trial look like to your customer? And this is the answer I get most of the time. The customer is able to see the difference our app will make to their business. Most of the time, we're talking about perception of value, right? So they're able to come in, they're able to see some things, they're able to figure out how this is going to impact their business, and they'll make a decision. Doesn't that sound like something that you would also get on the outside before you get, before you sign up for the trial, before you buy something? Doesn't that sound like a brochure? Doesn't that sound like a sales page? To me, it does. It says to me that we're putting all of the, you know, all of our eggs in the perception of value basket, and that can be a problem. Where we want to get to, and we're going to talk about in some detail today, is changing that mindset for you, changing what a successful trial looks like. Now, I can't tell you what a successful trial looks like to you or to your customer, but hopefully what we talk about today will help you figure that out for yourself. So, change your free trial mindset. Move from reactive to proactive. I mean, we've talked about that before, right? And then change from perception of value to realization of value, and then profit. There's your formula for success. So, talking about specifically common conversion activities today, CCAs. As you know, nobody talks about this stuff. And I mean, as far as I know, this definition does not exist outside of Free Trial Dominator. And as far as I know, if it does, it's because somebody took it and published it, right? I, as sort of having the only free trial optimization program out there, had to come up with a definition for these metrics. It's sort of, that's on me, right? So I made this up. Somebody's telling me something, maybe I'm wrong. Okay, cool. Nope, turns out it does not exist according to the almighty Google. So, let me see. We'll make sure. All right, cool. So it doesn't exist, and that's because I had to come up with something, which also means this is a definition that's always evolving, even for me, and it's going to be evolving for you guys. So the original definition was really this simple. It's the things that all or most paying customers do during the trial. So if we can say that, you know, most customers that end up becoming, or most people that end up becoming customers, they all did these things. Well, there's your CCAs, right? That's what we want to get to. And then what we can do is say, if, you know, the assumption there is that if they're all doing these things, that they're going to convert. And that's cool. And I think it fits. I think we all sort of understand that fundamentally. Fine. So why evolve it? Well, I found myself having to explain it to some people, and engineer types, and I found that I needed to explain it in a different way. Well, in doing that, I also discovered that it's not just using big words to make it sound more impressive. It's actually, I think, a much more actionable definition. So that new definition is this. CCAs are a set of story-driven actions defined by falsifiable hypotheses that, when completed as a set during the trial, lead to conversion. Now, if you guys have been reading like Lean Startup and stuff, you probably recognize where I took some of these big words from. They're not just big words to, you know, to sound cool. I think a lot of this makes more sense, and I'll kind of break it down a little bit. Story-driven. This is really important to understand. So it's not just these things that we're talking about are not just a step in the onboarding process, which is generally focused on us. It's on our app. It's internally focused. It's functionally focused. If we flip the script a little bit, if we talk about the story based on the customer, then that changes the way that we think about this, and it changes probably the whole process. So everything is story driven. It must be tied to something meaningful to the user, the customer, the influencer. Now, what's cool is if you are following Lean Startup principles, this ties directly to story driven development. Okay, where you don't create a feature, you don't create anything in the product unless there's a user or a customer story around it. So when somebody says, "I want to add a button there," you say, "Why? What's the story around this?" And so now we take a step back and we say, "What's the story behind import contacts in your onboarding process?" Yes, in some instances, importing contacts is going to be important. But if we can't articulate internally within the team, if we can't describe why somebody would want to import their contacts, then why would somebody want to import their contacts? If it's simply because if we get them to import their contacts, then there's our viral expansion loop, that's not a valid reason. So we have to have these stories. Ideally, these are stories that are based around customer goals for the use case that we're talking about, that we're building, the reason they're using our product. And that's really important to understand too. It's not just, get them in, get them to do these things. It's that here's what we want them to do, and here's the reason that they're going to do these things, and that's all going to come together at the end. Hypothesis, it's an educated guess. It's sometimes based on historical data. We can go back and look at data and say, here are the things that people do. People who have become customers, these are the things that they've done, which is good. It's a good way to measure what's happened in the past. That then becomes a hypothesis to assume. We assume that it's going to happen in the future, but we don't know it, right? We can't say for certain. So at this point, it's still a hypothesis. It might be based in data, or sometimes, especially if you're just starting out or if you don't have that historical data, it's going to be based on a leap of faith, right? This is your gut tells you. This is the hypothesis. You think this is going to happen, and you take that leap of faith. And falsifiable. It just means it's capable of being tested, and it generates either a true or false. So when you put these together and you put these CCAs out there, if this is not the end-all, be-all, we're not done. I think that's the thing that was missing from the original definition, which was to say, here's the things, that everybody does, and then they become a customer. No. Here's the things we think they're going to do, we assume they're going to do, we're going to monitor, we're going to keep checking on this, we're going to keep refining this, because that's just a static figure based on historical data or on our gut. We need to continually refine this, and we refine it by creating these CCAs in a way that tells us whether or not, or that allows us to test for whether or not they're true. Nothing major there, nothing really ground shaking in the way that, in this new definition. It's just sort of refining the definition to something a little bit more actionable. So CCAs, you want to measure and you want to monitor this. Are people doing all of these things prior to converting? Well, this is what we think they're going to do. Are they going to do it? Are they not doing all of them? Which ones are they not doing and why? And what other things are they doing that weren't part of the original hypothesis? Look, I'm not gonna lie to you. Monitoring this stuff is not necessarily easy. I mean, you can use products like Tatango. You can roll your own. You can just run queries in your database. And I mean, you need to figure out what works best for you. And there's some systems out there that aren't. This is still relatively new thinking. Stuff isn't necessarily out there in a packaged format. The companies that understand it, the companies that do it well, understand that it's better to take the time to develop ways to measure and monitor this than it is to go add that new feature to your product that you don't have a story around, right? So, you know, Wistia, as an example, knows that this is such an important part of their sales process that they take their development resources and they say, these are some, you know, these are the things that we're going to focus on, and they give priority to the things that are going to help them actually continue to make sales. So remember, this isn't just a software business, this, you know, that we're in, right? This is software as a service. This is SaaS. This isn't a thing where the product is the business and the business is the product, and everything has to be engineered in it, including monitoring for your CCAs. And you know, going with the lean methodology here, you know, you're going to pivot your CCAs, or you're going to persevere with them. You're either going to say, okay, this one, you know, this hypothesis is true, we're going to continue down this path, or we found this hypothesis, you know, this one CCA in the whole set to not be true, doesn't matter, it turns out it's not something we really need to be focused on, and we're going to either get rid of it as a CCA, we're going to pivot on it, we're going to say, well, this feature that we wanted them to take advantage of, the whole thing doesn't need to be done. We found that actually if people will just do step A there, then that's where we need to focus on. So we can actually shorten the time to reaching their CCAs. You say, well, but CCAs are an arbitrary measurement for us. We say, absolutely. But what it does is it is if we were to work on this feature, let's say there was a set of features and it had, you know, 5 steps to it to complete it, and it turns out that's not actually necessarily something people need to do to be able to convert, they only need to do part of it, then we're going to be able to re-engineer the process that pulls them through that onboarding, that engagement process, so that they can look at that set of features now and see only 2 things that they have to do rather than 5. It's a little bit less daunting. It's going to get them to that point quicker. It's also going to not allow, you know, if we said, well, there's these 5 things that make up this feature set that, and we have to continually work on it, we have to continually devote resources to development, well, it turns out really only 2/5 of that needs to be focused on. Now we can take those development resources that we were going to put on those, on expanding those features and refining those features, we can put them somewhere else because we know that they're not needed. Now I have to say, 30 minutes into this, this might sound counterintuitive to what I've been telling you, but don't overthink this. So take everything I've just said and figure out a way to make it simple for you, because it's not that complicated. It's just a different way of thinking about things. So I'm not saying you have to sit there and develop this whole program to figure out how to do this. Really, it's just the same thing that we said before. Here's the things that we think people are going to need to do. Here's why we think they're going to need to do this before they convert. And now we can build a plan around that, and we can measure for that. So just a real, you know, sort of an example here, just trying to throw some examples out here for you, you know, how to develop CCAs for an email marketing app. And I threw these out there because it's something I'm actually doing. Here's the questions to ask. Why is the customer going to buy your product if the trial is successful? Well, so that's a really good question, right? Are they going to purchase your email marketing app because they want to pay for an email marketing app? Or is there an actual reason? Sometimes we have to literally take a step back and ask and look at what we think is really going on. Sometimes I don't know. It's like, I think somebody's going to buy this because they know they need an email marketing app. Maybe, but they're certainly not going to continue paying for it. At some point, they're going to say, I paid for this thing for a couple months. It's not doing anything for me. It doesn't matter. The reality is we have to know why people are buying, right? So why is the customer going to buy your product if the trial is successful? Which then leads into the question of, what does a successful trial look like for them? If you don't know what the answer to that question is, then that's a problem, right? There's your problem. We need to start there. So let's say an email marketing vendor, you've decided to focus on a segment of the B2B market that uses direct response marketing via email. This isn't a newsletter service, okay? This is somebody that does email marketing. So that market segment, whether they're selling stuff, promoting content, whatever, they want click-throughs. They want people to click on the links in their email. Now, your prospect might only know that they want results. They don't know about click-throughs necessarily. Some will, but some don't know that. They don't care about that. All they want are results. So you need to build your CCAs around the overall story of results. So the overall free trial hypothesis for this email marketing app is if we can get the customer's results, they'll convert to paying customers. Maybe a more detailed hypothesis is if they use our product for 30 days, they should get a better, higher response rate each time they send an email, and that over the course of 5 emails to a maximum of 200 contacts during the trial, they should see a significant improvement due to the great tools and guidance we provide, thus making conversion a no-brainer. Is that perfect as a hypothesis? Maybe, maybe not. When we can always refine that, but that's a lot different than the way we were thinking about things before, right? So it's specific. It talks about our free trial length. It talks about what we're looking for in terms of goals. It gives some specifics. You know, we only want them to send 5 emails during that 30-day period, and because we don't want people to spam too much, you know, we limit it to 200 contacts, right? So continuing this, if the hypothesis, if we can get the prospect results, they'll convert. The detailed hypothesis is falsifiable. This high level one is also falsifiable. The low level, at the lowest level, it's falsifiable because we have specific numbers and we say, you know, over 5 emails. Well, maybe that's not what is required. We start to see it's only 3 emails, or it's not enough. Maybe they need to be able to send more emails. Maybe 30 days isn't long enough, because in a 30-day period, they can only send you don't want to bombard people, and they need 5 emails. So really, we need a longer free trial period. Just some things that we need to be looking out for. So this is very different. I just want to point this out. It's very different than any other approach I've ever heard of or seen regarding free trials. It's different even than what we've been talking about, simply because it just goes deeper into understanding this. And it's definitely, I don't know how to say this without sounding like a jerk or something, but I mean, it's how I've been thinking about it for a long time. I'm not better. It's just that's how I've been thinking about things. I just didn't know how to articulate it. I didn't know the best way to share it. So when I'm working with somebody, it's how I'm thinking. But, you know, in terms of coming up with a definition for it and putting it out here for you guys to understand it, that was hard. So the jerky part there was that, you know, that's how I've always done it. I didn't mean it like that. I just mean coming up with this definition was a little bit more difficult than I thought it would be. So, again, this is a different way of thinking about it. The traditional way, sign up, import contacts, embed your sign up form, and then send an email. That's maybe a more traditional way for an email marketing system to get somebody in. Are those steps required? Yeah, probably. But how do they play into the story-driven hypothesis? If our hypothesis is that value isn't derived from the product until the first email is sent, then it's not until that first email is sent that the hard work really begins. And that's a different way of thinking about it than we might have been thinking about in the past. So sign up, import contacts, embed sign up form, send an email, those are perceptions of value, right? Because all it does is basically allows you to do the things with the product, you know, to kind of go through the motions. This is how you import contacts. This is how you embed a sign up form. By the way, I'm not gonna import my contacts into something I'm not going to use, right? I'm not there yet. If our hypothesis is that value isn't derived from the product until that email is sent, then maybe we need to get them to start sending emails as quickly as possible. Okay. Now, there is no perfect answer there's not something you can just do without raising other questions, right? So this raises at least a couple of questions. Well, you can't send an email to a non-existent list, right? There's also the blank screen syndrome. I'll never forget when I very first, long time ago, I signed up for AWeber as my email marketing thing. I mean, this was like, I don't know, 7-8 years ago. I looked at it and I'm like, what do I write? I had no idea what to do. You sort of have to have an idea, you know, what you need to do. So this is the, you know, you open up Microsoft Word, it's blank. What do you do with it? That's a problem. So we need to be able to address those. And we don't necessarily need to address those right now, but I just want to point out that no answer is going to be perfect. You're going to have these questions that you need to be thinking through. But we go back to the hypothesis, which we think above all, getting an email out the door is the most important thing. So everything we do revolves around that goal, because that is the only thing that's going to produce results for our customer. Importing the contacts does not produce results for the customer. Adding a sign-up form on their page, does it produce results? It grows their list, maybe, but that's not necessarily results. It could be if, by the way, we found out that people really just wanted to be able to grow their list. But nothing else will get them new business or happier customers or informed members or whatever it is until we get that email sent. At least that's our hypothesis. So we can flip the script and get them to do something first, like create the email, and then figure out who they'll send it to. So maybe we get them to sign up, then we get them to create that email, then we figure out who to send it to, and then we give them questions. I mean, do they want to import a list that they already have? Do they need to grow their list organically? So we give them the option to embed a form. And then once we have some people, if they import a list, maybe we can get them to just go ahead and send the email once. Or if they don't have a list, we can suggest that they use an autoresponder. So every time somebody signs up, they're going to send an email. We don't have to think about this in a static, one-size-fits-all way. And I think that's the most important thing to understand here, is that we have this very interactive application, right? It's you know, the app, we really think about being something that we never consider it to be static, right? It's dynamic, it's always changing. But you know, the onboarding process is static, one size fits all. And that's something we need to get away from. So we need to get them to take the action that will lead to them reaching their goal faster first. And then, you know, in this case, if they write that email, and we can provide guidance on that, they write that email, they become invested, right? So we get them to do something. So this is similar to, I'm drawing a blank. Crowd.fm, Tekken's product. You know, where basically, you know, it allows you to create an event and then push it out to different different social networks for promotion. So he basically has you create the event first, and then figure out where to send it to, because we know that that's going to have that investment. And then, of course, once they do that, once they get the message, then they're going to be closer to that goal, and they're going to be more willing to add their contacts. They're going to be more willing to do these things that we might ask them to do up front first, which do have benefit for us, the vendor. But, you know, and it's also going to add, it's going to sort of that consistency and commitment. They've already made this commitment where they wrote this email. The consistency part comes in where they need to actually send it to somebody, right? So they're going to import contacts, or they're going to embed the form. So this is the uncommon approach. This is different way. This is a different way of looking at onboarding or engagement than anything I've ever seen. Most first run experiences, you know, they're based on a functional view of the software. I need to do X before I do Y. They're not focused on the why. Why should people take action? And quite frankly, this is why manual intervention is very often required. So when people say, you know what, we always have to pick up the phone, and if we pick up the phone and talk to somebody, you know, conversions go up because we're able to get them to actually start using the product. Well, that's fine. And if you're talking to people, just make sure you know what you're saying to them, and then try to figure out how to build that into the app. Again, you may not get rid of all human contact with people, but we want to reduce that. We want to build as much into the app as possible. So just remember that you're not selling software, you're selling something else. Software powers the solution, but ultimately you're selling that solution. And, you know, at the bottom line is, I'm not going to go in too deep on that. We already talked about it. The goal is to get the prospect to use the solution and get the solution quickly. CCAs as goal drivers, and this is another area that I really want you to think about. CCAs cannot be in place for the vendor's benefit. I've said that already. I can't say it enough, though. The CCA as a set is complete when a goal is reached. And we have that goal, the goal is to get better results every time you send an email, if we use that as an example. Goals can be reached before an entire set of CCAs is completed, and that result, that's how you get your early conversions. So if the CCA is story-driven with a goal in mind, and individual metrics that make up the full CCA set can have goals associated with those, and the goals are the customers and not the vendors, it makes a lot more sense. And it also makes sense that we can get to that point quicker. Now, we can even ask people what their goals are. You know, don't be afraid to do that. Ask specific questions. Maybe don't do it immediately. Right? Get them to take other actions so that when you finally ask that question, they're going to be more likely to answer it. If you just hit them right off the bat with a question like that, it might turn them off. So we can ask specific questions to drive engagement. Remember, don't design a static one-size-fits-all path. And I keep saying flip the script, but I like that because I think it really, we can actually see that happening. You can flip the script and get them to do something first, like create the email, and then ask them who they'll send it to. We can ask them to set goals, to define success for themselves. And then once they've done what we want them to do, in this case, send an email, then it's up to us to continue that engagement. So the hypothesis here for this is just sort of an overall hypothesis from the CCA goal drivers here. If they reach their goals, they'll pay us. So if they reach their goal early, before the end of the trial, that's going to trigger us to ask for that sale early. If they don't reach their goal before the end of the trial, well, that's actually a churn threat, right? So we should be monitoring for that as well. And sometimes you can't let someone fully reach their goal. Let's say, send thousands of emails or export a PDF report or connect to an internal system, whatever that is, until they pay. Well, that's that abuse point that we've talked about before, right? And this is a good problem to have. If you get somebody to the point where they've taken multiple actions and they're ready to do something, in the email marketing app, they've sent it to 200 contacts, they got a good result, then we can say to them, I think I'm jumping ahead here, but I'll say it. We can say to them, if you got a 50% click-through rate or something, astronomical, import the rest of your list and get that awesome result with even more of your list, or send it to the rest of your list or whatever we need to do. And then, of course, that's, only if you become a paying customer. But that's very different than punishing people. You've reached your limit, blah, blah, blah. Nobody likes that, right? We want to encourage people to do things. So the goal can be explicit. We can ask them to set it. We can set it for them. We can measure what happens against those goals. We can even use network effect data from, other customers to sort of benchmark and continually modify what our goal for them is behind the scenes. And I'll show you an example of that in a minute. So we can actually ask specific questions to drive engagement. We can ask them to set their goals. Once they're done, once they've done whatever they want to, it's up to us. I think I copied that slide over, sorry. So here's the example. For instance, if we had, in this email marketing product, we had a behind-the-scenes goal for that first email of 25% an open rate and then a 30% click-through rate on those opens. That's our internal goal. So once they send that first email, the goal is not to just get them to send a second email, but to send a second one and get a better result, because that is the thing that they want, right? That's what they're going to get out of this. Better results lead to customer goals being met. Goals being met leads to realization of value. Realization of value leads to conversion, and continual realization of value leads to retention. Playing around in the software just leads to more perception of value, which leads to less frequent conversion. Buying based on a perception of value requires a leap of faith on the part of your prospect, and this is the opposite of the real purpose of a free trial. So, the better result can be a higher click-through rate percentage or a larger number of those click-throughs, and we can offer guidance for them. So think about this. If they had a low click-through rate, we can say, go down this path to fix it in your next email, with the higher click-through rate being the goal. If they had a high click-through rate, that's great. We say, let's crank up the success. Convert today and add or send to your whole list, right? More click-throughs. So they realize value after one email, we're going to want to go ahead and convert them. So we sort of set that benchmark internally, and then we can use that network effect data to sort of refine that benchmark. Maybe we set it too high. Our hypothesis was when somebody comes in and writes an email, they're going to get a 30% click-through rate. The reality is most people get a 7% click-through rate, so our goal is a little bit too high. Now, CCAs are not these sort of core user actions that maybe Tatango says, you know, which is core user actions of actually, you know, doing a couple of things, maybe the frequency with which they log in or the time, you know, the amount of time they're actually spending in the product. They're not daily active users or monthly active users that some of the gaming companies might talk about. It's all of those or it's none of those. It's specific to the goals. So, you know, if you have an application that maybe just reconciles accounting at the end of the month, if somebody hasn't logged in for 28 days, maybe that's not a big deal. Maybe that's fine, right? I don't know. I mean, that's just maybe that's not even a good example, but something like that, you know, the time in the system or the frequency with which they use it, it has to be tied to whatever your goals are for them. And then just something to keep in mind, engagement during the free trial is not the same as post-trial engagement. Okay, it's different, but successful free trial engagement leads to post-trial engagement. You know, so if you get this stuff right during the trial, unless you're working in a very siloed environment, you're probably going to be good with sort of extending a lot of these same ways of thinking out into sort of post-trial engagement. Last couple of slides here, then we'll get to Ryan. I know I'm running a lot behind. If we're like, you know, this is we have to change behavior. CCA should change behavior. They should lead to a change in behavior in a positive way. Whether you know it or not, people that become new customers of yours are having to change their behavior. So, I mean, I've had people try to tell me that's not true. And it's like, it doesn't, I mean, it is true. If somebody's doing something new that they weren't doing, so they're now using your product, that requires a change of behavior. So we have to understand that. We have to accept that. Now, if it's something they really, really, really want to do, that change of behavior isn't necessarily something that's difficult to, you know, to do, but we have to understand that. So if we're like, hey, you know, do this, then this, then this, you know, maybe it's in our email follow-up or it's whatever, nobody cares. In fact, what happens is people get busy, and then you're do this, do this, do this, next, emails sort of pile up and you never really catch up. So, and I've said this before, I mean, I give you, you know, here's some emails, here's an example of emails you can send if you don't have a triggered system. Cool. You know what? That's better than nothing. But ideally, you want to have a triggered, you know, you're basically triggering messages based on activity. But I do want to say this. Those messages that are triggered, whatever they are, in-app, emails, SMS, whatever it is, they shouldn't be do this next messages. They should be get this result, and maybe not even that language, but something along those lines. And then, of course, you know, by doing this next. So it's not, it's speaking their language. It's reminding them of why they want to do this. We're basing that on the hypothesis of this is their goal. And then, you know, just remember that the hardest thing you can do is get people to change behavior. They will revert to old behavior easier than continuing to change their behavior, you know, in the way required to fully adopt your product. And if you know this, then you will be able to work against those natural instincts. And this is especially true if your product is complex or difficult, or does something new. It's you're introducing a new thing to them, and it's obviously especially true if it's all three of those. So that's my CCAs and engagement sort of update for you. I think to me this is a very different way of thinking about CCAs. So definitely let me know I'm interested in your feedback. If you have any questions, let me know.